This week on the Electronic Intifada podcast, 8 Palestinian prisoners are now on hunger strike in Israeli jails. Following International Women's Day, a look at how Gaza's women, quote, carry all of Palestine's suffering. We'll have an interview with Dr. Mona Al-Farah, physician, human rights activist, and director of Gaza Projects with the Middle East Children's Alliance.
While other women of the world are talking about equality with men and jobs and other issues, basic rights for the Palestinian humans, including women, are still violated and not sufficient for ordinary human beings.
Plus, how fair trade helps Palestinian farmers stay on their land, and news from the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, as the student government at another University of California, this time at UC San Diego, passes an Israel divestment resolution, and more. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor for the Electronic Intifada in Berkeley. We begin in the West Bank. The Ramallah-based Palestinian prisoners' rights group Ad-Damir released a statement earlier this week profiling 8 political prisoners currently on hunger strike in Israeli jails. 6 of the 8 hunger strikers are protesting their imprisonment without charge or trial, a practice known as administrative detention. Those on hunger strike include Samer al-Bark, who has been on hunger strike since February 27th, to protest the renewal of a 3-month administrative detention order. This is al-Bark's 3rd hunger strike in the past 2 years. Ayman Sharawna, who resumed his hunger strike in January after the Israeli prison service reneged on a deal to let him have a court hearing. Yunus al-Haroub, on hunger strike for more than 3 weeks. Mohamed Ahmed al-Najjar, who has been on hunger strike since February 26th. Zakaria al-Hi, who has been on hunger strike for more than 2 weeks. Ibrahim al-Sheikh Khalil, who has been on hunger strike since February 27th, to protest his administrative detention. Hazem al-Tawil, who has been on hunger strike since February 20th, to protest his administrative detention. And finally, Samer Issawi, who was released as part of the October 2011 prisoner exchange deal. Following his re-arrest on July 7, 2012, Issawi has been on intermittent hunger strike for more than 200 days to protest his arbitrary re-arrest. He is suffering from severe weight loss as his health continues to deteriorate. The Electronic Intifada reported that as of February 1st, 178 Palestinian prisoners were held in administrative detention in Israeli jails. Ad-Damir is planning to launch an end administrative detention campaign next month, demanding, quote, the release of all administrative detainees, and in the meantime, all administrative detainees must be granted their rights in accordance with international law. Ad-Damir writes in its call for support to the campaign, quote, not only are these prisoners held arbitrarily, but Israel's use of administrative detention violates several international standards, such as deporting Palestinians from the occupied territory to Israel, denying regular family visits, and failing to take into account the best interests of child detainees as required under international law. Ad-Damir calls on solidarity organizations, individuals, and human rights organizations around the world to join our End Administrative Detention campaign launching on April 17th. Those were excerpts from a longer report in our Rights and Accountability section. For much more on this story, visit electronicintifada.net. This week, Eva Bartlett reported that on International Women's Day, when many of the world's women are fighting for workplace equality and an end to domestic violence, women's rights activists and the majority of Gaza's women continue to fight for the most basic of rights. From the ongoing trauma and struggle to rebuild their lives after years of Israeli attacks and restrictions on movement, to expanding poverty and unemployment as direct results of Israel's 6 years of its siege, women in Gaza especially currently face unprecedented obstacles. In her report, Bartlett writes, quote, the siege manufactured poverty, leading 80% of Gaza's 1.6 million Palestinians to be food aid dependent, has caused increasing rates of malnutrition and anemia in women. A joint report by Medical Aid for Palestinians and Save the Children noted that anemia affected 36.8% of pregnant women in Gaza, and that anemia can result in poor pregnancy outcome, reduced work productivity in adults, and contributes to 20% of all maternal deaths. For the Union of Palestinian Women's Committee's Tagri Juma, the Palestinian woman, quote, represents Palestinian resilience, resistance, is strong, and is a mirror of the Palestinian struggle and steadfastness. We've lost families, children, and suffer under the closures and Israeli army attacks. We carry all of the suffering of our people, but we continue living and continue resisting. In its report on the suffering of women in Gaza, the Palestinian Center for Human Rights highlighted that prospects will not improve until the siege on Gaza is lifted and normal economic activity allowed. They stated, quote, "The dire economic situation means that many women and their families are sliding deeper and deeper into abject poverty. They have suffered the horrors of an illegal war and are now struggling just to survive." Those were excerpts from a longer report by Eva Bartlett. To read more about this story, go to electronicintifada.net. Joining us to talk about the current situation for women in Palestine is Dr. Mona Alfara. Dr. Mona is a physician, a member of the Union of Health Work Committees, and is the health chair of the Palestinian Red Crescent Society. She's also the director of Gaza Projects with the Middle East Children's Alliance and joins us from Gaza City. Dr. Mona, it's so good to have you on with us on the Electronic Intifada podcast.
Thank you, Nora, for interviewing me, and happy International Women's Day.
Happy International Women's Day to you, too. If you could give us your best analysis of women's rights as we commemorate International Women's Day, under tightening Israeli restrictions, especially in Gaza, all over Palestine.
Yeah, when I talk in this occasion, I all in my mind, I think of ordinary women who are living under occupation and siege and endure the most difficult situation while living such a life. Like all the community are living through these difficult circumstances, but especially women, they take the brunt of this occupation and siege. And when there is a prevalence of poverty in Gaza, I'll talk about Gaza. When there is prevalence of poverty in Gaza and increasing in the domestic violence because of the abnormal life we are living under the siege and the occupation, so you can imagine how difficult the lives of those women, and admirable too that we are still coping with the abnormal situations. Women here in Gaza showed a great deal of steadfastness, but still that it doesn't mean that they are not subjected to trauma. Because in our projects for with the Middle Eastern Alliance, we are faced with many women that are subjected to trauma because of the situation, and they have double role. They have to take care of themselves and the family as well, and endure the bad economic situation, because as I have said earlier, poverty level has increased because of the high unemployment, lack of resources, and all the life here in Gaza doesn't help them to lead normal life. So it is not strange to see increasing number of women who are coming to our projects, I mean Middle Eastern Alliance projects, to seek for support. We support them through programs that educate them how to look after themselves and how to look after their children during the crisis and in normal life as well, because life, as I said earlier, is very difficult, and this sort of projects, I am talking about Middle East children's projects, which we do it in cooperation with the Red Crescent Society and the New Horizon for Women and Children. These projects aim to educate women about mental illnesses, for example, about the post-traumatic stress disorder, how to deal with their children during the crisis. We try to help, and I think while women in Gaza still suffering of not having their basic needs like right to health, right to education, right to water, right to live, because it is unsafe and insecure in Gaza. While we are struggling hard for this basic rights, while other women of the world are talking about equality with men and jobs and other issues, basic rights for the Palestinian humans, including women, are still violated and not sufficient for ordinary human beings.
That's the voice of Dr. Mona Al-Farah. She's speaking to us from Gaza City. And Dr. Mona, as a physician yourself, can you talk about what was included in this report that we ran by Eva Bartlett, talking about anemia and poor pregnancy outcome, and also a rise in maternal deaths? Can you talk about how the siege and occupation contributes to these health effects for women?
I can see that anemia amongst women has increased. 45% of women of Gaza in their productive age are suffering of anemia, and this is high level of anemia. And children too, children school age, the anemia level is increasing, and this is very alarming too because of the children. But let's go back to women. And when 45% of women are suffering of anemia, that directs you to the next conclusion, that it is poverty. It is poverty that is hidden, because when you come to Gaza, on the surface you find life is normal, a lot of shops, many things, but poverty is there. Not everybody, just 5% of the population can afford to buy. And with the aid from the International Aid Agency, it supplies families with basic food, but not the well-balanced food to bring up healthy family and healthy children.
Dr. Mona, what are you most concerned about as a physician when you see these kinds of statistics?
I am concerned about the future of the children, because anemia means that children will be unable to develop normally and unable to focus at school. So we'll be faced in next few years with the generation that is not capable of strong or capable, and this is my main worry about. This is about the children. It is this project, we call our project Listen, Play and Heal, because it is ongoing conflict, ongoing aggression against children of Gaza. So we do psychological support for women and children through entertaining activities. And because it is long-term crisis, it's not acute crisis, it is actually acute on top of chronic crisis. That's why this project, where we provide children for space, entertaining, reading, writing, drama, it helps their psychological well-being. It is not, it's not only about food. Food is very important. I know it is a basic need, but psychological well-being of the children and women are very, 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 very important, because, as I said, this is ongoing, and we don't want to end up with very traumatized society, very traumatized community. So we help to support their psychological, this project help in supporting their psychological well-being.
Dr. Mona, thank you so much for being with us on the Electronic Intifada podcast. Again, that's Dr. Mona Al-Farah. She's a physician, a member of the Union of Health Work Committees, and is the health chair of the Palestinian Red Crescent Society in Gaza. And Dr. Mona, you're also the director of Gaza Projects with the Middle East Children's Alliance. And people can find out more about those projects that Mecca is involved in by going to meccaforpeace.org. Dr. Mona, thank you so much for all you do and for being with us on the Electronic Intifada podcast.
Thank you. Thank you, Nora. Thank you very much.
This is Asa Winstanley in London, associate editor at the Electronic Intifada. You're listening to our weekly podcast featuring news, views, and analysis on Palestine and the issues affecting Palestinian human rights. Visit us on the web at electronicintifada.net or on Twitter at Intifada.
The Electronic Intifada's contributor Emily Lawrence reported this week on the challenges Palestinian farmers face while trying to produce and export their goods, such as olive oil, to markets in Europe and beyond while struggling to make a living under Israeli occupation. But fair trade is helping farmers resist these restrictions. Lawrence reports, quote, "Through the Fair Trade Initiative, however, Palestinian goods are slowly starting to gain access to global markets. Fair trade, thought up in the 1980s as a way of supporting producers in developing countries, now provides a decent price and sustainable income to thousands of smallholders worldwide. The initiative reached Palestine in 2004 as a group of Palestinian farmers, exporters, and cooperatives came together in Jenin to form the Palestine Fair Trade Association, with the aim of establishing global trade links and providing a stable income for farmers suffering the impact of occupation. Despite a struggling economy, Israeli movement restrictions, and shrinking farmland, farmers were able to start selling their produce overseas for a fair price. Palestinian olive oil was first awarded the fair trade mark in 2009 and is now distributed to more than 17 countries around the world, including the UK, by companies such as Equal Exchange and Zaytoun. Lawrence adds in her report, quote, one of these farmers, Oda Al-Kadi, 47 years old, from Mazaria Al-Nubani in the northern West Bank, traveled to the UK recently as part of an event called Fair Trade Fortnight. Al-Kadi told the Electronic Intifada, quote, without fair trade, Palestinian companies and farmers wouldn't have access to global markets. Al-Kadi added, quote, Israelis control exporting and they give us very, very low prices, so it wasn't worth going through. We didn't get the prices we deserved. That's why fair trade is really important, bringing our products to new markets. Those were excerpts of a longer report by Emily Lawrence. To read more about this story and for more information on the Palestinian fair trade movement, visit electronicintifada.net. And now we go to news from the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement. Last week, we reported that the student government at the University of California at Riverside passed a resolution calling upon UC Riverside's administration, the University of California Treasury, and the UC Riverside Foundation to divest their holdings from companies materially supporting or profiting from Israel's occupation. Well, on Wednesday night this week, the Electronic Intifada reported that after a hard-fought battle, Students for Justice in Palestine at the University of California at San Diego claimed a major victory when the Associated Student Council passed a resolution calling for divestment from companies profiting from the Israeli occupation. The result, 20 in favor, 12 against, and one abstention, was announced to loud cheers. The resolution proposed by Students for Justice in Palestine is similar to recent resolutions passed at UC Irvine and UC Riverside, and names Boeing, General Dynamics Corporation, Hewlett-Packard, Ingersoll Rand, and Raytheon, among other companies that, quote, profit from Israel's military occupation and violence against Palestinians in violation of international law and human rights. The vote is not binding on the university, but is another indicator of growing support for divestment among students, which is why Zionist groups have vigorously opposed such resolutions whenever they have been proposed, and have supported draconian measures to suppress student activism at the University of California and other campuses. The issue has been hotly contested at UC San Diego. Last week, the council postponed a vote on the divestment resolution that was due to take place after a marathon 8-hour debate in a packed auditorium. The Electronic Intifada's Ali Abunima added in our report, quote, echoing false and inflammatory claims that have been made by opponents of divestment, a UC San Diego senior told the council, quote, this marginalizes the Jewish students on campus and makes them feel unsafe and unwanted. The divestment resolution victory dealt a defeat to campus group Tritons for Israel that had organized opposition to divestment, claiming it would be divisive. Members of Students for Justice in Palestine refuted such accusations in the campus newspaper, arguing that, quote, all political issues are divisive, but already UC San Diego is taking a side on this issue by having money invested in companies that are integral to maintaining the Israeli occupation. That is divisive, unquote. Zionist organizations had even marshaled the support of two members of Congress who wrote to the student counselors to urge a vote against the resolution. Ali Abunima added, quote, it would seem that the arguments in favor of divestment won out against political muscle. For much more on this story, other current news from the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement, and to read more about the national and international student solidarity movements for Palestinian rights, check out our activism and BDS blog on electronicintifada.net. And that's it for our weekly Electronic Intifada podcast. For news, information, cultural features and reviews, pointed opinion and analysis, and action alerts by our team of correspondents and bloggers, visit us online at electronicintifada.net. This week, be sure to check out our newest features and blog posts, such as Alex Shams' op-ed, Bogus Anti-Semitism Smears Against Muslim Students at Harvard During Israeli Apartheid Week. Also, Israel interrogates and expels well-known South African academic Salim Valley, invited to lecture in Palestine. Watch our contributor Ben White and Palestinian politician Mustafa Barghouti trounce an Israeli occupation functionary over segregated buses on a recent Al Jazeera English program. Graffiti Was My Education, an interview with Palestinian designer Hafez Omar. Also, Nablus Was the Center of Everything, an interview with architect Nasir Arafat. Israel coerces Africans to sign repatriation forms, and much more. At electronicintifada.net, you can also post comments and sign up for our daily newsletter. Follow us on Twitter at Intifada. Radio stations are free to use this podcast, and a special thanks to Flashpoints and KPFA in Berkeley. On behalf of all of us at the Electronic Intifada, thank you for listening.